Hello, welcome to episode 6, that's 006 of the Cow Daily. Alice, how are you doing?
I'm doing good at the moment. Shall I tell you about a weird experience I had last week, the day after we did the last live stream?
I'm all about the weird life, so please do.
So I woke up the day after the live stream and I had a really, really splitting headache, like the point where it is your vision starts going a bit funny and you're kind of not fully yourself and not fully with it. So I got up and I had a cup of tea and picked my phone up because obviously, you know, doom scrolling on the internet is a really good idea when you've got a blinding headache. And I went on Twitter and I never go on Twitter ever. And I was scrolling and I saw Alice Wolf trending on Twitter.
What?
You kind of get like titty slapped and your ego and anxiety at exactly the same time. That's kind of like, why is this happening?
Have you been saving this story? Because this is just like, I'm just sitting here in my seat just going, what?
Yeah.
I know I probably shouldn't say anything because I'm not on the screen and that's not good vision mixing, but sod all that right now. Speak the words.
Well, basically, after a few seconds, it probably took me a lot longer than it should have done to realise that actually Alice Wolf wasn't trending, but Wolf Alice was, who I've completely forgotten are a band, who I've got absolutely no connection to, by the way, in case anybody
had
was
you just in your sleep
wondering.
State, read it the wrong way around or something.
Yeah, I think I just switched it round in my head. And yeah, they'd won a Brit Award and that was why they were trending.
That would have spun me. That would have spun me right out.
You know, when you just have a moment going, why would this be happening?
Like, why is this? What have I said? We haven't even been promoting this yet. Like, how does it trending on Twitter? What's going on?
It's like I don't even think my dad's seen this yet. Like, let alone like the whole of Twitter. But yeah, that's all it was, really. Yes, so Wolf Alice, well done on the Brit Award. I was wondering why I'd won one for a second. Given that I'm not musical in any way, shape or form. But yes, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. I've just been like, obviously in ISF there's a hell of a lot that's been going on behind the scenes, so to speak. And I've just been working through it all, like just tasks, really, nothing like kind of mental healthy or anything like that for once. So, I've just been going through thinking about certain things. So far, I can't really talk about it at the minute, but I'm sure we'll talk about it in the future. Mm-hmm. Good things, you know, good things. Like, this is all really like coy, isn't it? Some funny things, great stuff. So I like stuff I can't really talk about and wish you hadn't asked how, like what I've been doing, but like there you go. I'll just transition seamlessly into the running order for today, everybody. We're going to talk about leveling up first and what that could mean or probably won't mean for the North specifically, or probably anywhere else for that matter, unless they've got like a long-standing Tory council, but I digress. Also, the war on woke. We really want to try and break this one down because this one is just, I mean, it's like, it's obviously like a beard for the class war. It's a culture war that they're trying to promote. So I think that's where we're going. And obviously positive news. And all I've got to say is Dino Kid, man. If you're not interested in the politics, stick around for Dino Kid at the end of the show. Yeah.
I love Dino Kid.
It's just the most positive news thing. It's basically the definition of positive news, isn't it?
Yeah.
God bless Dino Kid, man, for real.
It improved my day.
It certainly improved mine too. Also, if you can, go to this one here. Please subscribe to the Cow Daily YouTube channel. Really nice to see that like going up at a nice pace every time we put some stuff out. Also, I just want to acknowledge something as well. There was no clips went out last week, and it was basically because my phone blew up. You'll know this yourself, Alice. I absolutely destroy phones because I'm just constantly doing stuff. It's like recreation. It's a tool. It's like a real shock when I downloaded that app. That tells you all of the things that like how many hours you've been on it in a day. So it blew up and I had to get some mad refurb one off PayPal because I couldn't afford to buy a new one. So So yeah, I've got a new one now, and it's so rapid, man. It's brilliant. So clips will be returning, and also audio files and all that good stuff that I just did not have time to get out last week. But thanks to Dan for Danny H, old school Milk the Cow producer, for stepping in the breach on a voluntary basis. And he's got the Joe Glenton audio file and the Scientist Goes Pop audio file, and they're ready to go out. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Danny. All the very bloody best here. So I please subscribe to the Cow Daily YouTube channel. That would be really cool. Also, if you would like to support what we're doing, go to patreon.com/cowdaily, private chat forum, monthly mental health drop-in, all the things that, I've just said that, private chat. Get up. Shall we do Leveling Up, Pet?
Let's do Leveling Up. Yeah.
You should call me Pet there as well, because people outside the Northeast might think I'm being like misogynist, and it's just not the case.
I'll just call you Hug Bubble, because I know you love it.
Yeah, I hate that. No, I don't hate it. It's just kind of like, I'm just a guy.
You're just a gadget.
Yeah. Leveling Up.
Right. Yes. So Leveling Up. I've decided we should do a piece on this. It's kind of a new thing and kind of not. So it's kind of not. It was first announced, you know, what this Leveling Up plan that the Conservatives were going to do back in 2020. Was when they were first mentioning it. But Gove has come up with the white paper in the last week for this. So I think it's a lot different to what people thought it was going to be. So the whole Leveling Up thing was, you know, this plan that they apparently had to try and close the gap between richer and poorer communities. We think, okay, you know, we would welcome anything that, you know, that might, you know, close the poverty gap. All well and good. What have you got? So the paper came out, and the paper itself is an absolute mess. Basically, I think Michael Gove must have like drew this up probably the day after he was photographed at that nightclub in Aberdeen, is the only thing that I can.
For those who don't know, Michael Gove was allegedly off his pickle in a nightclub on his own in Aberdeen at like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Looking for some rough trade.
Yeah, there's some excellent footage of him dancing on the internet if you want to see it. But basically, this white paper, the first thing about it is that entire paragraphs of it are just copied and pasted from Wikipedia. It's like somebody who's left their homework to the last minute and is just trying to, like, you know, put loads of filler in it. There's like three pages on the history of Jericho and Rome and Renaissance Europe.
Accessible for the average person in the street then.
Yeah, yeah. There's even like quite a long bit on the ancient city of Constantinople.
Anything on the mysterious cities of gold?
Yeah, which again is like, even down to the formatting has been taken off Wikipedia. And 8 of the 12 missions as well that they kind of outline of these things that they're going to do are from Theresa May's industrial plan, which was scrapped 4 years ago.
Have they done another copy-paste job? Because they've been clamped doing this so many times where they've just copy-pasted from other things and just put that out.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. But in terms of what sort of help they were going to provide, there isn't actually, you know, one of the things that has been most apparent is, you know, they're talking about closing this gap, but it's not actually providing any more new funding.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no kind of, when you look at, you know, this Leveling Up fund and everything, there's going to be no extra money going into these communities.
They've done this before.
Yeah, yeah.
Northern Powerhouse.
Well, this was the thing that I thought of straight away when I saw it. I was like, is it just another Northern Powerhouse, which again they've kind of doubled back on loads since then, which again was meant to be sort of generating more jobs. So what are your thoughts on this? You obviously
I've got plenty, but what I'd like to do is play that propaganda video and
yes, we have to watch this. So,
and see what the hell is going on. We'll see you just after this short clip.
Leveling up means giving everyone in this country a job they love, the home that they deserve, and a future to look forward to.
So it's about new opportunities for youngsters here in Wolverhampton. It's about new transport infrastructure across the region. It's about new jobs. It's about new industries being attracted here. And of course, it's about better training for those new industries.
It's a great opportunity to revitalise our communities, investing in technology, infrastructure and skills and education.
Northern Ireland is home to some of the most dynamic and exciting businesses anywhere in the UK. Now is time for investment to deliver our ambition.
Living up agenda for me here in Scotland is quite simply the ability for us to help create more start-up businesses and also to enable and support those businesses who want to grow.
It's about making sure that everybody, wherever you live, benefits from the economy.
Levelling up is about recognising the unique strengths of our regions.
Levelling up is radical, overdue, economic, social and cultural. And it needs to succeed for all of us.
Ah, levelling up's about throwing my hands around, looking damn enthusiastic, but there's no substance for you northern monkeys, even though I'm allegedly from Scotland and was allegedly in an Aberdeen nightclub, allegedly off my very pickle. Alice Wolfe, levelling up.
Oh, just how can you watch that video without your toes curling all the way up, especially with Gove?
Gove's like right amongst it, isn't he? He's like,
yeah.
Here we are. How's the divorce going, Michael?
But it's going back to what you said. It's got all of these words in it, but there's nothing of any substance. There's no clear plan. And so the whole point of today, I was like, all right, you keep hearing levelling up. They keep talking about this. What is it? Let's do the explainer and tell people who might have heard the word but aren't really sure what it involves, what it is. But the problem is that when you do look at it, you're still none of the wiser because there's literally nothing clear about this at all. As I say, there's no extra funding. Some of the things that they've outlined would happen, they've kind of doubled back on before it's even started. You know, like they were talking about increases in wages and stuff like that again. But a lot of people desperately need that at the moment with the costs of living, which we've talked about before. But again, even this week, one of Rishi Sunak's top aides have said that, you know, towns and cities which are less connected, and basically what it means is towns and cities that aren't London, you know, are going to have to accept lower wages if they want to be able to compete. Well, you know, it's two complete contradictions, as they always done. Again, the nationwide broadband as well. I mean, if only somebody, you know, maybe thought that we could, you know, give people free broadband or something like that.
That's the most communist idea I've ever heard, quite frankly. And I'm really, really surprised at the Conservative Party.
Yeah, but they've even gone back on that. Some areas which have been waiting for it for a long time aren't going to be, you know, kind of getting that. And that's already had a U-turn on it as well. And they talk about fixing the education gap as well, all these kind of like vapid, meaningless phrases that they have when education has been hit with massive cuts and is in massive crisis still at the minute, due to those cuts and due to the pandemic as well.
Understood. I've said you sent us some slides. When would you like them?
Can we have the one about Gove's? I think we should talk about Gove's advisor as well.
yeah.
Which is very relevant there. So he has appointed an economist called Paul Collier. So this is one of the things about Paul Collier. So he's an economist who suggested that non-white Britons are not indigenous, and talked about the indigenous British becoming a minority in London. He was pulled up on this later in an interview, and he kind of tried to go back on it because he was being interviewed by a British Asian man, and was kind of like, oh, well, were you born here? And he was like, well, yes. He was like, oh, well, then you are indigenous, but that's...
Can I just interject?
Mm-hmm.
Define indigenous. Right, well, use us as an example as well, right? Can we talk about your heritage first and then we'll talk about mine?
Well, yeah, this is This is one of the things, because Paul Collier had said, you know, said to this guy, oh, were you born in Britain? And he said yes, and he said, well, you are Indigenous. However, he has said before, you know, gone on record before that, basically saying that if you have a parent who is an immigrant, then you're not, you know, even if you've got one parent who is an immigrant, then you're not Indigenous, which would include my mum.
Yes.
As you know, who's like born and bred in South Shields, but she is she's part Somali. That's where my granddad was from. So my granddad came here in the 1940s.
Say what your granddad's name is.
Well, there's two things about my granddad which are interesting, and they both involve Liverpool. Mm-hmm. One of them, that Liverpool was the first city that he arrived in when he first came to England. So he came to Liverpool, but his name also happens to be Mo Salah.
Big Mo.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, he came here in the 1940s, obviously, but you know, my mum's been born and bred here. She's never stepped foot in Somalia before. Obviously she had me and my brother. As you can see, I'm whiter than Tommy Robinson's septum.
you know, that is belt there. It works on two levels.
You know, but yeah, to look at. So it's really, he's what Paul Collier is saying is, you know, because if he walked past me in the street, thing about me is I'm extremely white passing, let's face it. And that's really what it comes down to. I would be very
surprised. The thing is, though, is that picture of you and your mom stood next to each other, you can use like the double of each other, but your mom looks black.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know what I mean? But you can see in it.
It's really odd. It's like, obviously, you know, she's dark skinned and dark eyed. I'm white skinned with blue eyes.
Exactly. And this is what my point about define Indigenous. Not a chance.
No.
Not a fucking chance. Can you define what Indigenous is? Unless you're coming from that perspective of wanting to reduce people. And like, it's almost like a laziness of mind if it's done without sentience. But when it's done with sentience, it's really quite. Mm-hmm. Well, it's fucking far right language, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it is like, especially here in the UK. I mean, you know, and it's kind of been taken. You know, they've taken it from the States, where obviously there are Indigenous first names people. That means something completely different over there, you know, and what it's defined as. But they kind of think it can sort of easily be applied here, but it just can't. You know, we really are a nation of immigrants. Absolutely.
I mean, how far back do you want to go? Because you've got the Anglo-Saxons, you've got like the Vikings. I mean, like, my heritage is Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you go back just a few generations, and like, I wouldn't have been born here if it wasn't for the people want to say the famine, but like, I don't believe it was a famine, because if you look into what actually went on there, it was a managed decline thing, which then led to the Irish diaspora. But that's a completely different episode. Back to this, it's, you cannot define it. I mean, we both, like, ostensibly are white, but, and I am, like, you're it's not as simple for you, but even though you look white, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, this is kind of what it really comes down to. And this is why I'm always really hyper aware of people who say things like what Paul Collier has, because actually, let's face it, we know exactly what he means. He means dark skin. Because,
exactly.
You know, when he's been talking about this and about London, when he's been walking around London, he's not talking about, you know, the white faces he's seen who may have some mixed heritage. It's basically who looks white and who looks something other than, you know, me and yourself, you know, do, you know, can go as under the, you know, we can pass as white. Absolutely. And that's what he really means. I'm sure if the guy he was being interviewed by who challenged him, if, you know, if his heritage had been like a white British mother and a white American father, they wouldn't have been having that conversation, you know, because it is when people say things like that, really what they're talking about is the color of your skin.
Quite. And I mean, there's people in my family who are mixed race, you know, and like that's afforded me the opportunity to like have a personal understanding about what the experience, you know, and it's like it's been a really valuable thing for us to have those conversations, you know, to help us understand. And not trying to like sort of hop on the back of it, but I understand like if my sort of ancestral Irishness was like worn, like obviously, then we know like the Fash. I mean, they went to Tyneside Irish Centre and attacked a political meeting there a few years ago, you know. Mm. And the Irish Centre, like there was this bet before a Newcastle United home game a few years ago, who could put the windows in first? Because for people who don't know, it's just over the road from St James's Park.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So there's like that anti-Irish thing, and I mean, there's no blacks, no dogs, no Irish, you know. It's I'm not trying to like get myself involved in the oppression thing, because unless I told people, they wouldn't know. So I have not had that lived experience at all.
I mean, I think I can, you know, I haven't either, because as I say, you can't tell with myself. So it's like, you know, and this is why I try to explain to people about white privilege and how it's not, you know, it's not a case of saying that, you know, you've never had a difficult life. How I try to explain it is, you know, look, I've got members of, you know, I'm of mixed heritage, and some of us look white and some of us don't. And actually, I can see a difference in how, you know, nobody shouted racist abuse at me in the street. Well, I had some anti-Semitic abuse once when I had black hair from some racist who couldn't tell the difference between goths and Jewish women. That ended well for them. They got the shock of their life after that one. But you know, that I don't have to worry about that when I step out of the house. It's not something I think about. Is something going to be said to me? Am I going to get racist abuse? It doesn't cross my mind at all, because it generally, you know, it doesn't happen. Same with being stopped and searched. We look at which members of my family have been subject to stop and searches and which wasn't. There is quite a difference in skin color that has, and that's so I kind of try to use it as a way of sort of explaining things there, you know, particularly when it comes to terms like white privilege, which is generally, you know, very misunderstood. And I find it really, you know, people might say, oh, well, it's why is it relevant? You know, is it really that much of a bother what Paul Collier has said? But yeah, if he's, you know, if somebody with those sorts of views, you know, who consider non-white people to not be indigenous, whatever that means to this country, you know, people involved in that in planning, you know, economic strategies.
Of course. I mean, look at these credentials, man. You can see them up here. Sorry, I went a little bit further on there.
Absolutely.
But the 72-year-old is a development economist at Oxford University's Blavatnik School of Government. I mean, look, he's in a very privileged position there, and obviously he's got a lot of leverage to shape policy because he's been appointed the Leveling Up Advisor by Gove. Mm-hmm. And if you look at like sort of things that have happened when Corbyn was leader of the Labour Party, I don't wish to harp onto these things. If this was him doing this, the press would not be shutting up about it. You know, you're getting a few articles here and there, but it's not some like big mad campaign, is it?
No, absolutely not. And somebody like that involved in the planning, well, what do you think they're going to do to communities which are inhabited, you know, primarily by non-white people? And it just doesn't bode well. You know, you just think it's, you know, how is money going to be spent, if it's going to be spent at all? We already know that the poorer communities, I think the Financial Times back in 2020, when, you know, they were looking at this levelling up strategy that they had, sort of said that they weren't, you know, they missed loads of the markers of poverty and a lot of the areas that they'd kind of pulled out of what might benefit from this levelling up scheme. There was really, really poor communities that were missed entirely. It's not, I mean, I think you picked up on this earlier. It's absolutely not a coincidence that 14, the 14 areas had Conservative MPs.
Right. I mean, that's a big shock to me there, Alice. Yeah. I mean, who would have known?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so it's not really the areas that are most in need, you know, the most deprived. Whenever I see things like this in it, you know, time will tell. But when you say that they're not going to be spending any extra money, they're looking at kind of possibly bringing more powers, you know, kind of more decentralized powers. It, I just think gentrification is really what they're, you know, is really what we're looking at. And certainly in the areas that I can see around me in sort of like the poorer areas, that's exactly what you're seeing. It's not real growth. Mm. And just have we got the slide? I don't normally use dictionary definitions.
I do. I like them.
But this one I wanted to use because it's one of these things, it's got something in it which is like one of those accidentally truthful in there. So what we mean by gentrification, it's where the character of a poor urban area is changed by wealthier people moving in, improving housing and attracting new businesses, often displacing current inhabitants in the process. And then the last bit is the process of making someone or something more refined, polite, or respectable. And that's the crucial bit, is what they're doing is, you know, gentrification would be a good thing if what it did is it came and it brought more money into the area, housing improved, crime drops and everything like that, and everybody's standard of life is raised. But that isn't what happens. You know, poorer people do get pushed out, you know, marginalized minority people get pushed out as well. Some of you might have seen, if any of you are particularly local to the northeast as well, there was a shot of some kids who'd basically like nicked a digger in North Shields.
I shared that the other day.
And we're basically joyriding up the street in it. Now I've lived that area where that's happened. I've lived in that area, I've worked in that area. And that, you know, there's, you know, well, it's North Shields as well, which, you know, a couple of decades back as well was the scene of the Meadowell riots as well, which some of you may have heard about, which kicked off. And there, it's one of those areas that's doing it all up. If you walk down the Fish Quay now, it's virtually unrecognizable to even what it was a few years ago. You know, they've got some like apartment blocks, which are like 400 grand for a flat, overlooking the, you know, overlooking the river and things like that. Yeah, there's some nice places to eat, and you know, you never want to see places being like run down into the ground, but really what good is it when it's, you know, all it's doing is pushing those poorer people out into even smaller spaces, which then raises tensions as well, particularly racial tensions, when you've got like more people with not a lot of money who are crammed into a smaller space and there's no social housing available there. And to me, this is what leveling up is. It's not really going to do a great deal for the people who really, really need it.
Well, it's just, as you say, it's pushing people out into different places, and it's going to break families up. And you know, we've seen this happen before, and London's had a history of this for a lot longer than sort of these. I think they wanted to do that kind of like push people out of London thing in other areas too. I mean, Newcastle, obviously, where we're from, there's been money going into just the city centre and maybe some of the affluent areas to the north of the city.
Yeah.
But other areas have been left to rack and ruin. And I came back relatively recently and had a bit of a walk around and I couldn't believe it. It was like there was rubbish everywhere. Mm. Like the whole infrastructure is just bending at the seams, and it's like, can I come have some money for here instead of these big flagship things? So I think what the Tories do very well is announcements, but also like big capital investments in maybe one thing. A good example of that's in Teesside. You know, there was a guy on that video actually. It wasn't Houchin, it was Andy Street, who's the other Metro mayor. But anyway, Houchin's the Metro mayor in Teesside, and they did something around the airport there, and they were, the marketing budget must have been like virtually the same as the capital investment, because they were just on about it, and it's led to like some successes at the ballot box in elections since. I mean, obviously Hartlepool's a good example, isn't it?
Yeah,
so absolutely. They're very good at the marketing side of it. And if I had a criticism of the Corbyn era, that wasn't very good. And also there wasn't very, like, I mean, to be honest, they could have thrown all the money in the world at it, but it wasn't going to even match the full spectrum smear campaigns that were going left and right, would it? Yeah. So leveling up, what chance do you think there is for like the millions of people living in poverty to actually benefit from any of this?
With a really heavy heart, I would say absolutely zero. It's you know, I don't think we're really going to see much. As I say, we're seeing announcements of like, oh, you know, they're giving, you know, this much money to this project, for, you know, for supporting families in deprived areas of Hartlepool and things like that. But actually, it's not, when you look at kind of the cuts that have been made, it's actually not going to make any difference. They've still got less money to be able to do that, you know, since the start of austerity. It's like the whole, oh, we're putting 20,000 more officers on the, you know, on the streets. It's like, well, you've taken even more off than that. So it's, you know, it really doesn't make any difference whatsoever. And this is a constant theme with them, in that they're very good at, you know, using buzzwords and, you know, slogans and soundbite politics. But we keep not seeing something, just like we did with Northern Powerhouse, just, you know, like, unfortunately, we're going to see with this. You know, when communities...
Should we take some comments?
Yeah.
The MEC's resident historian, Jez Hunt, is here.
Oh, good.
There's been Arabic people in South Shield since Roman times. Its name was Arbia, the place of Arabs. That's centuries before England exists, even as an idea. Indigenous is a nonsense. What a beautiful, like, description in a caption that goes up on the screen, Jez. Thanks for that. But it's, like, absolutely, like, I didn't know that at all. That is proper interest and stuff. And it's just actually more grist to what you're actually saying, isn't it? So Ryan Jones is referencing the video that we played. All I got from that video is that they're trying to undo some of the damage that started in the Thatcher era, like battering you in the face and then offering you a new two paracetamol.
Yeah.
People are informed innately.
Exactly that, Ryan.
So, man, right, we've got one from Paddy Kenny here. Nice, good, solid Irish name there. Good lad, Paddy. Leveling up. God, Boris makes it sound like we're playing a RPG. That's role-playing game, not rocket-propelled grenade for warmongers out there, like Keir Starmer, maybe others. Who knows?
Exciting if that is what was happening. But
I think in his head he almost is, because, like, you know, you know about the story about when he was a kid where he was just, like proclaiming to anybody who would listen that he wanted to be world king. And in his mind, it's not like a laugh or an ironic statement. He feels it and believes it, and he sees this is on a path to being the world king.
I'm going to say, isn't that just what you write on the entrance exam for Eton? Like, I want to be world king.
I mean, like, that and money will get you straight in Eton. Yeah. Like,
exactly.
So, I mean, leveling up, just to put it into a sentence, a load of old shit that won't benefit the millions of people living in poverty. And, I mean, the top and bottom of it is you can build all of the shiny, glittery things you want in city centres and force up house prices and rents and all the things that you want to do. But that is a busted flush. And I think these people are too far removed from everybody else to understand what's really going on the ground. And what's going on the ground is a bubbling apolitical insurrection, I feel. There's kind of like, I don't think it's even about politics to a lot of people. It's about heating or eating. It's about, and a lot of people not even having that choice now. They can't afford either of those things, you know? And that is only going to end one way. If, like, you know, you look at history, food riots are very, very real, aren't they? So I am concerned about where this is going to go. I've said this a few times, and I really think it's that kind of end of empire, end of epoch moment we're living in. I think there was, like, in pandemics throughout history, like post-pandemic, there's only really been, I think, four times out of a hell of a lot, I can't remember the exact figure, where there hasn't been some kind of like era defining change of government or political system or something. So they're going to have to start throwing more than a few crumbs down at the bottom. And I think the thing that's stopping them is ideology, arrogance, and they're also flush with all of this new money, allegedly, that they've got via the Brexit scam, allegedly. Mm-hmm. So I'd say these things differently, but you've got a bang and allegedly in there, because, you know, it is for obvious reasons, haven't you? And obviously we're trying to be journalists now, innit? So I'm really concerned about it. I'm really concerned about it because it's often not the people at the top end who get subject to the violence, because they've got the, like, they've got the cops around them, they've got the army if they need them, mm-hmm. and it's often normal people who get the brunt end of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's really quite scary, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I don't hold much hope for the short-term future, but I will always hold hope for the future, because I believe in humans. I believe ultimately we're good, and it's societal pressure that turns us a bit bad, and we look for blame. And then if that's stoked up and facilitated using words like indigenous and other things, then mm-hmm. bad things happen, which is, of course, a seamless link into the war on woke. Do you see how I'm bringing the pain?
Yeah, well, I was thinking about this before, and actually they seem like two completely different subjects, but really they're not. And I've noticed a few sort of crossovers. So yeah, let's go on to that, on with that. So tell me about the war.
I'm just going to do a little bit of housekeeping. If people could, please share the stream, good people. That just helps reach new people ahead of us doing my big promo campaign, which I've been on about for the last couple of weeks. But trust us, I've got so much work to do, not just Milk the Cow stuff, but there's other things I'm doing that I'll probably tell you about at some stage in the future. But if you could share the stream and help out now, that would be really, really, really cool. Also, if you can just like and comment on the videos as well. I noticed on YouTube there's like people watch the videos, but then we're not getting the comments after. So if you could comment on them, it helps the algorithm and all that stuff. I don't 100% understand yet, but that's what you're supposed to say, isn't it? Also, if you could sign up to the Milk the Cow mailing list, really hoping to get the second one out this week. And I know I said I would last week, but again, so much on. But and then it was, I had to actually do something at the back end of last week, which, just as I told you, which I can't talk about on here, I had to bloody do then. So that got, I had to get put to the side. I am the Riddler. This week, I am the Riddler. Riddle me this. Which, again, is semi-seamlessly going at the war on woke, because that's like tackling the bloody Riddler, like trying to understand it. So anyway, I shall bring this in. I'm going to start with a definition.
Right, so, okay.
Woke. Woke is a comparative adjective. Woker, superlative objective, wokest. So it defines as alert to injustice in society, especially racism. We need to stay angry and stay woke. Now, an addendum to that is that... Oops, sorry, I've... I'm all over the bloody place. An addendum to that is that the woke... stuff, I first heard it in like sort of Black Liberation Movement. It was from Stay Woke. Chuck D, Public Enemy, one of my personal heroes, really has shaped like how I think in a lot of ways from growing up listening to Public Enemy. He was the first person I saw use that. And what I'm seeing is it's almost like an attack on like something that was gaining a lot of traction, particularly through like sort of cultural means, because you know, people like myself got on to what Black Liberation was through music, you know, latterly through like listening to Dead Prez and other hip hop artists. That then, like, listening to Public Enemy then led us to like reading Eldridge Cleaver, who was a Black Panther, and mm-hmm. understanding beyond what we were told, if we're told anything, which was, oh, they just hate white people. Yeah. You know, but if you actually educate yourself, it wasn't the bloody case at all. The Black Panthers back then were working alongside other like predominantly white protests or activist groups, but it was anyway, I don't want to get into the history of the Black Panthers, because that would be forever, and it's not really my place to do that, is it? So the war on woke, is it came up today, and ITV News Conservative Party chair Oliver Dowden has said that the West should not be obsessing over pronouns or seeking to decolonize mathematics, in a speech denouncing painful woke psychodrama. Does he even know what psychodrama means? Who knows? So there's a few sort of reactions that I'm going to bring up for you. So Siobhan Benita has responded to this. Why on earth is Oliver Dowden in Washington? What's Washington, D.C., not Washington, Tyne and Wear? I don't know why he would be in Washington, Tyne and Wear. Maybe he's there for leveling up. Who knows? Giving a speech to an organization that on its own website denied the climate emergency, opposes abortion, attacks LGBTQ rights, opposes healthcare reforms. Who is paying for this trip? Interesting as well. Who indeed is paying for this trip? a little bit more reaction. Julian Mohm, who is from the Good Law Project, he's broke it down interestingly. Do not challenge the continuing right of people like me to rule in our own interests. Oliver Dowden translated. He goes on to say, what he calls wokery is the demand for a place at the table of people without power. They are working class, they are black, they are LGBT+, they are women, they are disabled, they are Muslims. Sneering at wokery is sneering at them. That's a really interesting breakdown. Alice, what's your responses to those particular things on the Oliver Dowden thing today?
Right. I did really like those last two comments that you showed. You know, I think that's a lot of the time when you hear people complain, using woke in a derogatory term is, you know, it's to actually attack people, really. You know, as you said, it's got like the word's got quite a long history. I know it was like apparently used in a labor union manual or something in America in the as far back as the 1940s as well. I think it was used in that context in the New York Times sort of 20 years later as well.
Okay.
But as a way of, you know, about the Black Liberation Movement and everything like that, I think it's very, very recently that we are starting to see it's becoming completely weaponized, and there's certain, you know, kind of commentators that will use it time and time again. The first one that springs to mind of somebody who says it a lot is Lawrence Fox, who just really, really winds me up in terms of weaponizing that word and doing everything he can to make himself look like a victim, when he's just a bit of a cringe, really. You know, so we are kind of seeing that weaponization of it, where actually, you know, as that last commenter quite rightly put, is actually it's just about kind of having some common decency for everybody, and you know, talking about basic human rights is not and should not be considered wokery. You know, there was a part of me as well that kind of thought, is this really a new thing? Like, it's not. It seems to, you know, where is the term do-gooder used to be used as a general term of abuse, which I always found a really, really strange insult that somebody would be complaining about you for trying to do good. You know,
what does it even mean? I mean, like, no, it's a mad, strange thing to say to somebody. It's like, surely wanting to be a good person is like a plus.
It's do-gooder, it's social justice warrior and everything like that. Where if you even try and kind of talk about these issues, I think the one that really kind of winds me up is that it's, you know, to talk about these things is anti-working class in some ways. And it's just like, you know, our working class people, they don't want to talk about pronouns. They don't want to talk about them. It's like, oh, what, we don't exist. You know, there's no LGBT.
Are you working class?
Yes.
Am I working class?
Yes.
I ain't got a problem with people having pronouns. And my whole vibe with it is, like, if people want to be, like, referred to in a certain way, I'll respect that because that's what they want. I don't see what the problem is other than this manufactured culture war that they've got, we're fighting, so we don't talk about class.
Yeah, and I'm you know, I'm working class. I'm not entirely straight either. So, you know, it's almost like...
You're not entirely white either.
I'm not entirely white. No, I'm just a great pretender. I'm just a little bit of everything. Pick and mix.
I'm bald, I'm heterosexual, and I'm white. But I'm still down with the pronouns, man. If you want to have pronouns, cool. Mine are he, him.
But it's almost like you said, you know, when people say that, it's like LGBT people don't exist on council estates. Well, they do. Disabled people don't exist in working class communities. They do. It's not something that's separate. I did end up going down like a right rabbit hole with this recently. I was like, when I've been like reading about stuff today, and there is two strands to it as well, though, in that how this whole kind of wokery thing and the war on woke is, you know, how you see it play out in social media, particularly things like Twitter and everything, but how it's like used to their advantage. And, you know, obviously treating people with basic human rights is a good is a good thing, to put it mildly. Representation is as well. So like, you know, kind of showing people of different backgrounds and stuff in films, in TV, in music and things like that. But there's like a really cynical edge of this, I think, that's sometimes referred to as like woke capitalism or corporate wokeism and stuff, where you see like corporations who are sort of, you know, and you see it, it's one of the things that does my head in sort of every Pride month, in that, you know, they get all the corporations get the little Pride banners out and it's like, oh, look how right on we are.
The police get like so much hammer off the Lawrence Foxes of this world and whatnot. And I mean, like, say what you want about the police and we do, but like, you know, they did something. Like, do people in the LGBTQ plus community like that? Well, they're not a homogenous mass. Some will and some won't, but maybe there's some who feel, well, that's nice, you know.
You know, there are still problems with how the police are still treating, you know, like, and I know when they attend domestic incidents which involve LGBT people, you know, there's still massive problems there despite all the training they do. There's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of people who do want cops at Pride. There's a lot of people who don't as well. Well,
quite aye, because, you know,
because of the history.
Exactly, and aye, Stonewall. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Stonewall's called Stonewall because of the Stonewall riots, and admittedly it was in New York, but you know, we could pull out instances where gay people have been battered off the cops.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Yeah, so you've got all of that. And I don't know if you saw the outrage about the green M&M recently. This is a classic example of like corporate workers.
I haven't. How are you? I'm strapping myself in for this one. Let's see what's happened.
Okay, so it started. Well, it appeared to first start out is that we've seen that they make the M&M adverts, to kind of make them into little cartoon characters. So
yeah,
it's like M&M with arms and legs and everything like that. Well, there was an M&M that was kind of Can an M&M look sexy? I don't know. Basically, they had this M&M with like, which had like really long eyelashes and had like go-go boots with like high heels on, which suddenly changed to slightly shorter eyelashes to wearing like baseball-y type things. So then there was this whole thing, oh, they've changed the M&M to look less sexy. So like, and it's because of these woke people who don't want us to have sexy evidence. I don't know. What, you know,
the,
and then there was...
Hold on, just rewind a bit, right? Like, what are they on about? It's like, are these were people saying anything when like Minnie Mouse come along and they stuck a bow basically on the stop of the same character and a dress? You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck are
actually,
they talking
well,
about?
It's funny you mention that, because Minnie Mouse has come up again recently in that, just for one thing, I think, is that Minnie Mouse has been drawn with a trouser suit on. I think it was something to do with Stella McCartney or something. And again, because Minnie Mouse wasn't wearing a dress, loads of people kicked off about that. Because again, it was pandering to the left.
I said that in good faith, thinking about the old school cartoons in the like 1930s, 40s, whatever. I didn't actually realise they've started picking at Minnie Mouse now.
No, this is
what's wrong with these people, man? Like, who cares?
But then there was another twist in the tale, because of course,
how are you then? I'm gonna have to, I'm double strapping myself in now.
Double strapped in. So yeah, there was this entire thing with the green M&M, and there was people, you know, people winding people up who were complaining about the change of the green M&M and everything like that. You know, people kind of saying, is the green M&M non-binary, or, you know, is the green M&M trans, and like all of this. And then quite a few sort of activists started pointing out that, and it's like absolutely no coincidence, which I think the M&Ms are made by Hershey. Now, at the moment, there is a current thing going on with Mars, Nestle and Hershey, where they've been named in a lawsuit in the US by former child slaves from the Ivory Coast, from cocoa plantations. So basically, there's this whole ongoing court case about those companies, you know, kind of using child slavery to make chocolate. And it has the Hershey campaign just basically invented this entire thing to kind of cover up the story, because then that's what people...
Two corporations are kind of throwing dead cats into the mix. Yeah. Does anybody tell the fucking truth anymore? Does anybody act in good faith? Like, and meanwhile, all of this, are people who are like, are being oppressed, just collateral damage to all of this corporate bullshit now? Mm-hmm. And well, I say now. I mean, they've been doing it for decades, like, so.
And Nike with Colin Kaepernick as well was another classic example where it was like there was, you know, people burning trainers because Colin Kaepernick, who was an NFL player, who took the knee, and saying that Nike were kind of supporting that and that it was un-American and everything like that. And, you know, and Nike kind of, you know, oh, well, we're so, you know, about Black liberation and about, you know, protecting the rights of, you know, Black people. But then again, are, you know, when you look at how they're, you know, taking a bit of a closer look at how their shoes are made and mm-hmm. how their clothing is made in other countries, well, actually, you know, it's almost like that they can use sort of this sort of corporate wokeism, if you like, to kind of throw out these token gestures without actually allowing any real progress, you know.
Which is what corporations have done since time immemorial. So, yeah. I mean, I'll just throw this comment up on the screen. Robert Grady, just another chapter of the class war without using the word class. Quite right. And what I feel is happening here is people in power or positions of privilege don't want to talk about class. You know, they don't want to talk about, they want to like stoke this manufactured culture war. Like what this, the narrative should be around like people who are oppressed is like, why are they oppressed? Let's listen. Let's think about what they're saying. I mean, here's a great example, right? You know, me, I had like cards on the table, like any kind of change, like straight away can appear jarring. So when the pronouns discussion first started happening, I was like, what the fuck is this about, man? Can we not just talk about the people in poverty? Why is all this happening? And it wasn't until I got on to the reason it was being amplified as a problem, then I understood what was going on. But at first I was just too busy trying to like look at like, immediately I'm working in communities and I'm seeing like every day people who can't eat or can't afford to put anything on their electricity meter. I was canny busy. Mm-hmm. And I, like, if you look at it this way, let's not judge people who maybe are in that jarring phase, you know? Let's like try and like explain the things and look at the things and be mindful and aware that not everybody's a dirty puppet master who wants to fucking pit everybody against each other. Do you know what I mean? Like that. The Mebbies were just in the same place as me because a lot of people are freaked out by the world and they're busy, you know, so they don't have the time to understand the things. So I want to always impress that upon what we're doing. It's like,
but I think most people do, and I think a lot of it with the internet, it is made to, you know, it is kind of made out to scare people. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, you know, oh, well, if you use the wrong pronoun, then you're going to get, you know, you're going to get the shit kicked out of you. It's like, no, people are going to bite back at you if it's something you do deliberately and repeatedly. You know, then it's fully deserved. But it's mm-hmm. you know, people do. I've always found I've been around these communities for a long time. They've, you know, yes, they're tired of often constantly having to explain themselves, but you know, you do meet people where they're at. They've often had to do that with their own families, man, half the time, you know, who've maybe not been as accepting first, and it's taken time, you know, for that. It's something that they've always had to do. They've always had to do, and it's kind of making it into something it's not on the internet, and you see it time and time again, and then that's kind of what creates like a real divide in saying, well, actually, you know, these aren't people who are separate from you. You know, you live next door to them, you're mates with, you know, you talk to them at work in the canteen. It's, you know, it's not difficult. You're probably doing it already most of the time.
Ask questions of people, ask them, you know, do it in good faith. Like just say, oh, well, I'm not sure about this, you know? I mean, there was somebody that you know, and this is like our guiding principle in what we're doing. Like said, like, I know you're not going to take the piss out of us. What's Palestine?
Yeah, what is Palestine? And that
whenever we're doing something, we always think, right, what is Palestine? Like, are we being accessible enough? Are we being like open to all people? Because sometimes that these kind of like visceral reactions can come from people's frustration at not understanding, but also like people sneering at them because they don't understand it, so that doubles down. And what, like, it's that whole like spell checker racist thing, that whole movement that happened when Facebook got mad popular. It was like people like, oh, you've got a comma in the wrong place, you spelled that wrong, and then as if that shuts somebody down, like it was the ultimate slam dunk. not like actually trying to like see what the person was saying or try and like meet them in the middle somewhere and have the conversation. Something I want to point out, actually, there's somebody commented on Milk the Cow Facebook page today, and I'd asked, sorry, it was yesterday, and I'd asked them like on the main thread, can somebody explain to us like why you would want to vote for Labour without mentioning the word Tory? And it was a good faith. I made sure people knew it was in good faith.
Okay.
Yeah, somebody commented below and felt comfortable saying like on there that actually voted for the Tories at the last election. So I've actually said, look, would you like to come on the podcast and have a conversation in good faith? And he says, yes, I would. So I've asked him to inbox the page and maybe we'll get him on next week to have a chat.
That would be good, yeah, because going back to the you know, what is Palestine, you know, that's kind of come from somebody, you know, who I'm really close to, who's, you know, who kind of dropped out of school a bit early and has never really taken a massive interest in politics until very recently, you know, and finds it all, like I did, a bit of a minefield. I'm personally, you know, and I know a lot of people aren't, but like I'm really intimidated by overly academic language. I used to really like struggle in political meetings when I was a young person because I just I didn't grow up around it. I haven't been to university, don't really understand it. It was only kind of reading texts which were kind of written in, you know, kind of in a really sort of conversational way that I actually started getting it. It's not that we're, you know, we're incapable of understanding you know, kind of complex political theory or anything, but for some people, and I'm one of them, it's a lot of it is written unnecessarily like that. I think that's the thing. It's not that you can't use big words or, you know, or anything like that. Of course you can, you know, and it's not that working class people are put off by big words. They're not at all. You know, yeah, some of the most articulate people I know, like who are from extremely working class backgrounds, are extremely articulate, you being one of them.
Well, thank you. I do try.
Like, for me, it's like I just really, really, really struggle with it. And so
pick up on that? Just not because I want to big myself up, but I want to tell you about how I became articulate, or like, in your opinion, I would never say that about myself, of course. But it was when I was 17, like when I was bullied for a bit at school, and I was called the professor. So I just basically sacked off school, tried to be as cool as I possibly could be, like started necking trips and being Mr. Rave, and like I was the one like surlily listening to like early rave music on me Walkman and that, you know, at school, and not talking to the lasses, and I was secretly scared of them, you know what I mean? Like, just, and like, I'll fast forward to when I was at a rave. I bumped into, this was when I was about 20, I bumped into like a lass I went to school with, and she came up to us, and obviously we were a little bit lubricated, and she went, do you realize like a lot of the lasses at school fancied you because you were like some kind of mysterious kind of like individual and whatever? And I was like, oh no, I didn't. But like, obviously off I went dancing and whatever, and I obviously thought about it later on. I was like, damn, why didn't you say something? Because I was like, I didn't do very well back then with the lasses, and it was because I had the wall up, and the wall came from being bullied. Now back to like the being articulate and whatever, I made a conscious decision, because school didn't do it for me, because I like just kind of just couldn't get with it after that. The persona I was creating for myself didn't chime with the professor thing. I couldn't be both. So when I was 17, I bought a copy of The Guardian, and I got a dictionary and a thesaurus out, and I read it from cover to cover, and I didn't understand half of it. But if I didn't understand something, I got the dictionary out and I looked, and then I'll get the thesaurus, and it's, oh, it's like that, it's like that. And I did that like for the next day, and then the next day, and then the next, and just kept doing that. Like, and just took it upon myself to think, well, look, I've left school now. Like, I just have to be who I am. And I think that's a problem that working class people have, eh? It's, it really, like, you hit a wall with the people around you. They want to drag you back down, and sometimes they don't even realize they're doing it. Sometimes they do, though. And you're not really allowed to be who you really are. But then we have these accents. So then I found when I, like, progressed in my career, and I would come across like sort of like middle class people who they would judge you immediately. Like, not everybody. There's some lovely people that are like some people I would consider mentors. but the ones that wanted to, oh, there's Nainat, and like drag him down and judge him. So like I felt like I'd existed in the cracks between the two things, and that's what gives a class consciousness. You know, that's what led to that. And that's kind of what's been, I don't know what I am. Like still at 45, coming up 45 years old, I don't know what I am.
I'm still unpicking that a lot at the moment, but I think that was kind of it kind of becoming quite clear that it's, you know, that I'm neurodivergent as well. And I realized that I was, you know, kind of learning about masking behaviors, and I'm like kind of reading it going, oh my God, that's me. But going on to the thing about accents as well is, obviously, I mentioned my mum's like a Geordie Somali woman. Yeah. And, you know, I was like living in, you know, up in the Northeast when I was young, and then went back, you know, to Cumbria, but I used to probably talk like that. But obviously going back to the Northwest as well, like people think, you know, what the hell is that accent, and finding it hilarious and kind of sticking out like a sore thumb at school. So I started like changing it, like deliberately changing it. And I used to always lapse back into it whenever I spoke to my mum. So I was like really odd, like speaking kind of like I do now half the time. And then when I'm talking to my mum, speaking in this like really, really like broad sort of Geordie accent. And I had to train myself out of it because it was being picked up on. And you do as well, depending on whereabouts in the country you are, do realise there is, people do treat you different depending on what your accent is as well. Absolutely.
They do. And I think like we've got to kind of get past it and whatever. I mean, you know yourself, I'm in a relationship with somebody who is very middle class. Went to boarding school in Switzerland and other places too. And she's one of the most lovely people you could ever wish to meet. And sometimes it's like, even within a relationship, we do have misunderstandings based on the consensus reality that we had, but yeah, we'll sit and we'll talk and learn from each other. Cause it's not just me about me educating on what it is to eat gravel and like grow up. You just don't know when we ate gravel and smashed in people's garages and stole things. Allegedly. Strangely enough, I grew up with somebody who nicked a JCB. But actually, we could do now. I haven't got time for this right now. But anyway, these are the things that, like, and I've lived in other countries too, and they don't really have these acute day to day problems with class that I've experienced. It seems to be like, it's a very English thing. It's a British thing too, but it's very English. And it's that kind of north-south divide thing. And I found that when I was going to meetings, and like there was an organization I used to work for, right? And like I was involved in music and other things when I was young, so I never went to university. And also I didn't have the confidence to. I got my qualifications like later in life. And I got to the highest level you could. Like I got higher than some people who had like master's degrees just simply through me experience and like working hard. You know what I mean? But I always felt like I had to work twice as hard in there to be taken seriously. Cause there was some, even when that happened, were just looking down their noses at us, and that's their problem and whatever. But at the time I wasn't the man that I am now. It was like, you know, maybe 15, like less than 15 years ago, but not far off. I wasn't the man I am now. I wasn't as confident in myself. And I wasn't as like comfortable in my own skin at all. And I know that now looking back. So I would get quite bristly about it and like say to like colleagues, I want to smash his effing face in. And you can't do that in the workplace. Sadly, you can't do that in the workplace. But I mean, this conversation could run and run. And I want to finish off some positive news. But I think we'll definitely come back to this culture war stuff, because it's a load of shite and it's used to divide us. It's used to divide us on racial lines, class lines, any lines you want. And I think we've got to be woke and actually stay woke and understand what's happening, you know, and understand that it's really, when it boils down to it, a way to reduce people who aren't white. And it's kind of like they're not saying what it's all about. They're saying it, or at least they're saying it very quietly by words like indigenous, as Jez has quite rightly pointed out, absolute historical fallacy. Yes. Yeah. So just a couple of comments. We've got Angie, Shandy, Martin. Loving this podcast. Being a lass from South Shields is the first watch. And I'll be back definitely. Thank you. No, thank you, mate. That's really lovely. It's lovely that you're stumbling across it as well. Like I say, we've decided to just get used to like doing this again and learning the tech. I explain like how, because I work the tech on this as well until I can afford a producer. It's kind of like when you're playing the guitar and singing at the same time, I've got to be aware of two things. So it's lovely that like Angie's like enjoying where we're at right now. Like we've got a lot of growth to come, Ellis, and it's a lovely comment. So thank you very much for taking the time to spread some positivity, mate. It's a really appreciated thing. Thank you.
Very.
What else we got? Let's have a look and see. Dave Slaz, please block spam bots. I assume that's on YouTube. Slaz, if you tell us how to do that, I certainly will, mate. Definitely. I think he's referring to this. Vum Ngrr.
I was
right.
Just say
yeah,
that.
We'll block that. Hold on. Oh yeah, I can do it from here. Ha,
ha,
ha. Ha. We've got Dino Kid, and if you've been here since the start of the show, well done. But we love Dino Kid. So just to describe what I'm about to play for you, it was something that I stumbled across on Reddit, and I think it's one of the most beautiful things ever. And I'll say more when we've played it, actually, but
yeah, okay.
Check out Dino Kid, man.
Hey, you slip. I won't fall. Maybe I will. That's okay, because we all fall. Have fun, Dad. Let's go down this big old hill. Wee-hoo! Wee-woo! Wee-hoo! Tyrannosaurus! I'm a stegosaurus.
I'm sometimes a stegosaurus too, kid. Seriously.
I'm a stegosaurus.
I love that child. And honestly, like earlier today, I was a bit stressed out because of just the amount of stuff I've got to do. And I just found, because I'd been like, when I was actually trying to like convert this video to get it in a format that's accepted on StreamYard and whatever, it just wasn't doing it. My internet wasn't working. I was like, but then I like put it up and I pressed play on it to play it. And I was just started singing, that's okay, because we all fall. And I just thought, man, this is just like too pure. And how can you be mad when you like, it was worth all the messing around to get it converted and get it up on the stream. What a lovely kid. What do you think of that?
Well, as you say, it's just like so pure. It's just like being able to hear like just him singing to himself. The dino ski suit was something else as well. Like I would 100% wear one of them, like especially in some of the weather we've had up here recently.
yeah
walk along the coast. But yeah,
well, I didn't know, I'm in Shetland, so it's not like it's actually weird, isn't it? Like I'm good putting out a one about that I did about climate change. I took a little diversion, but we're talking about like why Shetland hasn't really snowed very much, because there was a 2 week gale force 6 storm where there was only about 6 hours in 2 weeks, where it dropped to 20 mile an hour and it was back up and it wrecked my head completely, as you know. And there hasn't been the snow you would normally get and things like that, where you would think in Shetland you would get that.
Yeah.
And anyway, I just totally diverted off from Dino Kid.
Dino Kid.
I love Dino Kid, man.
Yeah.
Jez Hunt, he's been getting right amongst it. Powdersaurus wrecked. I like that play on words.
Oh, he's so
Joanne cute. G, cool AF.
Yeah.
Dave Slaz, this is cute AF. I'm so PG on. I just feel like I can't say it as fuck.
Really trying not to say it.
It was just the Dino Kid. It's just like too pure. I can't be swearing, can I? So. Yeah.
Nah, he's lush, man.
Yeah, there's another one from just Betty Whiteead. We've been had that clarified. Betty Whiteead. Lots of people who were born and grew up in South Shields. We used to play the Kick the Can and what is now RBA Roman Fort. No way. How cool. And Slaz, Dave Slaz, Up Heliar. Do you know what Up Heliar is?
No.
Right, it's the fire festival like that happens in January, back end of January or sort of mid to late January in Shetland. And it's linked to the Viking heritage. So you might have seen footage of this where there's like 1,000 people walking with flaming torches.
No, I have seen, I've definitely seen footage of that. I just didn't know that's what it was called.
Yeah, yeah. It's, well, it's been cancelled the last 2 years because of COVID. It was cancelled this year as well, which is a devastator because the reason they have it on is we've been living through a lot of winter where it didn't get light till about 20 to 10 in the morning and it was getting dark at 2:30 in the afternoon. And it was hard times that, like, especially when the weather was bad and you had limited light to walk three dogs. And then they're bouncing off the walls and just giving you all the grief, you know. But I wouldn't change the experience we've had up here, and we're leaving soon, actually, a couple of weeks. It's somewhere that I love and will always have a place in my heart. And you never know, we might end up moving back here because it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Jez Hunt again. I don't like putting like the same people up all the time, but it's just been interesting. Jez Hunt, we used to supply the leather and that for Up Heliar and Late Preview. No way. That's cool. Let's give Jez another plug because I've still got it from last week. Jez actually runs Ancestor Leathercraft. So if you go on Etsy and type in Ancestor Leathercraft, there's loads of stuff for like TV and things like that. Things you've probably seen on camera on the telly, but also you can buy those things too. So help a brother out and go to Ancestor Leathercraft on Etsy.
I might as well add as well that my partner, like, after did the live stream last week, was just like, oh, how did it go? I was like, oh, it was canny, and that, like, it was really good. I was like, but when there was three of us this week, he was like, oh, did you have, it's like, oh, we had Jez Hunt, and he was like, you could see him, he was like, oh, I recognize that name. I was like, do you remember, like, during the lockdown in the first pandemic where we couldn't go anywhere, we used to listen to a guy like tell stories and stuff, and he was like, like, honestly, it's like you might as well have just told him, like, Tom Morello would have, like, been on or something. He was like, he was so excited. He's like, not excited about the fact that, you know, we were doing a live stream, but he was definitely excited that we had Jez on.
Oh, it was a beautiful thing having Jez on last week. It was like, on it though, because like you just forget. I think my sort of whole timeline of life has been screwed because of the last 2 years. It's almost like you know those years occurred, but your brain doesn't register them as normal years. Then I realized like how much I've missed people like Jez and other people. I mean, we've only seen each other, is it, once in those 2 years? Where like last time I was in Newcastle, we met for a drink and whatever, which was a mistake, like drinking on an empty stomach. Like I was absolutely blitzkrieged, but that's a completely other story.
Here's why I was stuffing my face with cheese sandwiches when I first arrived.
I was stuffing my face with beer. I realized after that I couldn't really drink anymore. I shouldn't really drink anymore. So I've lessed it. Anyway, we've done more than an hour, but it's been a beautiful thing. Dino Kid, man, check out the Dino. Loving the Dino. Just a little bit of housekeeping on the way out, as usual. Please become a patron and gain instant access to Milk the Cow's private chat forum at patreon.com/cowdaily for as little as £1 a week. There you can also get involved in the monthly mental health drop-in. I've had people like inboxing us about that and like wanting to be involved and whatnot, and that's a real blessing. I'll be putting out like the mailing list stuff. So if you haven't signed up to it, go to the links in the description of this podcast and you can find stuff there. Alice, thank you very much once again for spending time and having the chat. And just on my friendship thing, it's been lush just having this regular sort of check-in with each other every Tuesday night as well.
it's been a really cool thing.
Just realizing how much I've missed you and stuff. It's been,
absolutely. Been weird. It's mad. You realise how much we've kind of lost really through all of this. But no, it's times they are a changing.
Good. Yeah, man, definitely. So hold on, I'm gonna put this up actually. Just before we go. Joanna G, there's a few of us chatting in the forum. We need some more, come along. I must have my notifications turned on for Discord. Sorry, I will actually go in there and have the chat with you. But yes, definitely. Love that, and like we'll absolutely get stuck into that, but please bear with us if you imagine we're building an entirely new project and I just feel overwhelmed at times. So we'll definitely be getting to it, and once it finds its sweet spot, as I've said, and again, this is why we're not promoting it as much, because we want it to be the best thing it can be coming out of the speakers and obviously for your eyes. So thank you for letting us know, Joanne. What's she doing here? She's touting for business.
Always appreciate it. Thank you.
Slaz as well. See you all next time. Love to all. Much love to you as well, big man. Catch you later. Thanks, everybody, and thanks for all your comments and shares and all of that cool stuff at this nascent period that is the Cow Daily Empire as it goes and takes over the world. Right, hold on a minute. I'm in the wrong thing here. Here we go. Do you want to see some closing titles? Because I do. Bye-bye.